Here he is, the former district attorney of Erie County, New York. Currently an attorney in private practice with a big firm, a ritzy firm. Here is John Flynn. Tanner, can we get John Flynn on board? John, thanks. We appreciate you joining the show so much.
No problem, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah, you're pretty awesome. So anyway, that's the buttering up part of the show. Watching Savannah Guthrie, and I think this is a very interesting thing to bring up. Savannah Guthrie has been living in hell for a long time now, day after day after day. Confusion, false leads, all of the whirlwind that somebody has to endure in the position of Savannah Guthrie, who, by the way, it just isn't a woman who makes $8 million a year, which in New York City is not really a lot of money. She's a daughter. She loves her mother. John, I'm very disturbed by the changing appearance of Savannah Guthrie. I'm very concerned about the stress under which she has found herself, because the woman in this new video, and this is not some sexist nonsense, don't even go there. The woman we've seen in these videos, you can almost see the stress sinking into her face. When you have been DA or an attorney in general, did you often remark about how fast, how quickly, how suddenly extreme stress in a situation of extreme dire necessity, how quickly stress can manifest?
Oh, there's no question about it. You know, everyone deals with stress differently. Everyone has different reactions to certain situations. But, Tom, you and I are totally on the same page here. When I saw that video yesterday, I saw a poor woman who looked like she was at the end of her rope here. I mean, that it was just this was just a plea from the heart. And obviously, you know, you can just tell it's coming from the heart, but yep. You know, it looked like someone who, you know, is grasping for anything here. And after, you know, gosh, my mother's still alive too. I can't even imagine what she's going through. And it came about clearly in that video yesterday. That she has not gotten any good news in the past 24 hours.
What kind of advice would you give if you were working with a victim in a situation like this in terms of dealing with the stress and making sure that she takes care of herself?
Well, yeah. So everyone, and I say everyone, you know, I assume here that the Pima County District Attorney's Office is somehow involved here, even though I haven't seen the DA in 17 days, which is, to me, is mind-boggling, okay? But whatever, yep. It is what it is. But the DA's office there is going to have victim advocates. They're going to have trained counselors, like we do here in Erie County, that, you know, help victims of crimes. Especially serious crimes. Normally the sheriff's department is not going to have those personnel. The FBI will have those personnel, but in local government and in local law enforcement, that's going to come from the DA's office. And so, here in Erie County, we probably got a staff of 10 victim advocates who work with victims on all sorts of crimes. We had a person who just did homicides. That was her only job, was to assist victims, family members of homicides. And so, you know, that those people are trained. Those people are going to, you know, talk to these people on a constant basis, update them as to what's going on. I presume that the sheriff is updating Savannah Guthrie here and her family, but normally that's going to fall to the trained professional victim advocates at the DA's office. And that's what would happen here in Erie County if this crime would occur here in Buffalo.
former Erie County DA John Flynn is with us once again because he's pretty awesome. And if you want to get in on our conversation in the 716, it's 803-0930. 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. So pretty much open here to anything involving the Guthrie abduction. Now, John, something I haven't heard people talking about, but I do think it is important. Can you discuss like what the statistics are and what you personally observed with respect to people don't understand that a violent crime, a homicide committed against a family member, often breaks up families, husbands from wives, etc.?
Oh, all the time. I mean, I think I said it to you last week at some point in our conversation. The overwhelming majority of crimes that take place in this country are done by people who know one another. Now, no, I put that word no in quotation marks. Some know the victim very well. Some just know them tangentially. Some are just a business relationship, you know, a drug dealer to another drug dealer or a drug dealer to a drug user, okay? But there's the overwhelming majority, there is some connection to the suspect, the perpetrator, and the victim. Is there random crime? Are there random victims who get mugged and get burglarized and get assaulted, et cetera, et cetera? Yes, there are. I'm not saying there's not, okay? But those, quite frankly, Tom, are in the overwhelming minority, not the majority, the minority. The overwhelming majority are people who know one another. And so, you know, again, we had an unfortunate incident, you know, allegedly here in Buffalo this weekend where, you know, a Buffalo police officer allegedly, you know, killed his wife or girlfriend. And so those type of domestic violence, family member on family member crimes occur too often. And when they do, they obviously just destroy families. In this case here, the good news that came out today for the family is that, you know, finally after day 16, the sheriff's department has not exonerated, but has cleared all the family members as suspects in this case. So, you know, I don't, that's no surprise to me and you, I don't think, because we talked about it last week that it seemed the family was being cooperative, that all three siblings were helping out, and now they've been cleared.
What took so long? Because that's one of the concerns I have. I'm not completely sold on the investigation of this situation, and I would have thought, unless I'm just being Pollyanna, I would have thought that they would have been cleared a lot sooner than this. I mean, conclusively cleared, because the failure to publicly clear them in an expeditious fashion resulted in a lot of people coming to some conclusions that weren't very accurate.
Agree. They most likely cleared them a while ago, quite frankly. They probably cleared them, you know, last week or maybe even the first week, but they just didn't come out and say that. As a matter of fact, the someone from the sheriff's department just last week, I believe on Thursday or Friday, said that no one is cleared, that everyone is still a suspect. So, you know, obviously, you know, that's what probably facilitated this over the weekend here or today, was whoever said that on Friday, yeah, probably, you know, probably got talked to and said, hey, you know, you shouldn't have said that. And then now they had to come out today and say, hey, you know, we got to backtrack here and publicly clear everybody. But, you know, you don't want to close doors. You don't want to prematurely, obviously, clear someone publicly and then, God forbid, have to walk that back. That would be even more embarrassing. If you yep, publicly clear somebody and then you got to walk that back, well, then you got some explaining to do there.
I will have a question. Well, actually, I'll do it right now. Public information officers are in use at many departments across the country to prevent exactly that from happening. You have one clearinghouse for information. Everything goes through the PIO. Is that helpful?
Oh, my God. God, my PAO. I'm gonna shout her out right now. She'll probably hate me, but Kate Monroe. What was?
I don't care. Talk to Kate.
She's the one of the greatest human beings ever. Okay, she is phenomenal. Okay, I mean you know if the Tucson, if Pima County DA's office or Pima County Sheriff's Department had Kate, you know, a lot of this stuff probably wouldn't be happening. Okay, I mean it is vital to have a good PIO, to be, you know, be a clearinghouse.
Yep.
To have someone that the media can go to get information and filter out, and even, you know, I don't got to tell you this, you're a pro, Tom. Even to have off the record conversations, okay?
Oh yeah.
Because those off the record conversations are huge. Where you know you can't publicly report something, but you know what's going on behind the scenes, so you don't report something that's misinformation because
right.
You know about it. You can't talk about it, but you know about it. And so having that background information and having a pro as the PIO who knows what information to give you on background, off the record, vice what information can go public, makes these things go incredibly smoother. And quite frankly, there's been, no one from Pima County here that I've seen do any talking except the sheriff and a couple of, you know, his staff members. And, you know, you really need a PIO.
Indeed. I believe you do. As long as it's not O'Callaghan from the New York State Police, you don't want him. But anybody else is great. Sorry. I'm going to get a text in about a second. Yeah, James O'Callaghan, PIO's Troop A. Obviously, former Erie County DA John Flynn knows of whom I am speaking. But we had him on a week or so ago, James O'Callaghan, trooper with the New York State Police. A great example of a public information officer. And the thing is, John is absolutely right. There are so many things that you pick up doing this for a living that you can't really attribute to a source in public, but you know the information is good, all right? For example, that tragic day in May, I had spoken with a couple of fellas about the situation on the ground at the Tops, and I knew it was just going to be a horrible situation, just awful. But the PIOs can really make a difference. And the background that we're just discussing also makes a huge difference. The only problem with doing those off-the-record background things, John, is I'm always afraid that after 44, almost 45 years, I'm going to blow somebody's cover and I'm going to give them up to the public. I freak about that.
Well, yeah, that's always a risk. But, I got it. You know, as you know, most, you know, people in the media business, know how to keep a secret. And I tell you the truth, I can honestly say, in 8 years as DA, I was never burned. You know, I gave a lot of off the record, conversations, and information, and no one in 8 years ever burned me. And that's just a professionalism that the local media is here in Buffalo. I can't say enough about them.
No, I mean, I'm so glad. I was going to do a joke thing, but I realized this is the topic and I got to keep it. I'll keep it relatively serious. Former Erie County DA John Flynn is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. Our phone number for your question for Mr. Flynn, 803-0930. In the 716, 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. John, one of our callers earlier mentioned something that I had also seen on Ashley Banfield and had discussed, and that is new information or new speculation about Mexican cartels' involvement in this. I don't believe that is the case because they make lots of money with drugs and human trafficking. Why would they want to blow the big pie for the cherry on top?
Absolutely. And if they wanted money, and they were pros who knew how to, get money and were businessmen and women, they would have been asking for money, more than just twice now. Okay. I mean, we haven't heard anything about a ransom note in what, a week now, days now. And so, those kind of people, they would have had a ransom note delivered, yep, like to the FBI within 24 hours.
Indeed. And as an example, we talked about this with a caller from Holland before, when the mob guy Dutch Schultz told the commission in New York, since Thomas Dewey was putting so much pressure on him, he wanted to whack Dewey, made his case to the commission. Commission said, no way. If you do that, you are going to bring hell down on all of our businesses. Dutch Schultz very unwisely slammed down everything and stormed out of the meeting, turned around and said, if you guys ain't going to do it, I'm going to do it myself. Later that night, Dutch's restroom break was rudely interrupted by Bug Workman, who killed him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a good thing to, for your viewers out there, listeners. Thomas Dewey, what was the DA of Manhattan? So it's not a good idea to threaten the DA. I would agree with that.
It is kind of ironic, don't you think, that the mob saved Dewey's life when he was the prosecutor?
Yeah, yeah, but they knew obviously that if you shoot and kill the DA, there's going to be a lot of problems.
I think it would have killed the American mob in its infancy, for the most part.
Yes.
It is 27 minutes after 5 at News Radio 930 WBEN. During a show like this, I thank myself for being a geek and a nerd and watching these videos all night long. I call it show prep. My wife calls it obsession. And, John, let's talk about the what everybody is waiting to see, hopefully tonight, maybe, and that is the DNA tests on the glove and the conclusions thereupon. So question number one is this glove. How would they have determined that it was the suspect glove in the video to the exclusion of all the other gloves?
Well, they haven't yet. I mean, this I find kind of interesting because, you know, all these media reports out there are saying that, you know, the glove matches the glove in the video. Well, you know, you use that word match when you're talking about DNA. I mean, that's a scientific word, match, okay, in the DNA world here. What people should be saying is that the glove that they retrieved, which, you know, what is 2 miles away. It's not like, you know, right in front of the house. I mean, it's 2 miles away. You know, looks like the glove on the video, is similar to the glove on the video. That's a more accurate statement there. Okay. We'll have a better idea if in fact, it is definitively the same glove if they can, you know, match the DNA evidence off of that glove to the individual in the camera who was wearing said glove on the night of the incident here. So, again, until they get to that point right now, all it is a glove that they found, and again, it's one glove, not gloves. It's not a pair of gloves. Right. One glove that they found that looks like the glove on the video.
Former Erie County DA John Flynn is with us. Can you walk us through the process of extracting the DNA from a possible suspect's glove, and then how it is fed into the DNA equivalent of the APHIS system?
So you have the glove, and then they basically scan the glove for any type of tissue from your cells, your hands, a hair follicle, any type of organic material, and we're talking minute here, like minute to the nth degree, okay, of organic material here, mainly hair follicles, skin cell residue, that kind of thing. And then you extract that. How they actually extract it, that I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but they somehow extract it. And then they, send it, they send the glove to a lab. And then the lab is the one that's actually going to extract it. And then create what they call a DNA profile, which is, you know, if you remember that show on PBS years ago where you had all the different, you know, DNA molecules, and they put them all together in a cartoon setting there. It's basically just, you know, a profile, like a map, in scientific terms of what they extracted from the glove. And then they take that profile and they upload it into the what they call the CODIS database that the FBI has. And they see if they can get a match. The CODIS database is proliferated with DNA samples from people who have been arrested, people who have been convicted and prosecuted, and from evidence from crime scenes all over the country. And you can imagine just the thousands and thousands of profiles that are in this system. And, you know, they take the profile that they got from the glove, and they upload it in the system, and they see if they can't get a match. And, you know, the only way you're going to get a match here is if that person, if it is that person in the video's glove, then that person in the video would have been either prior arrested, prior prosecuted, or committed another crime that no one knows about, and he left his DNA at the scene. Those are the only three ways you're going to be able to get that match.
Sorry about that. My headphones slid off my head. That's very horrible. Are we here, Tanner?
You're here.
Are we good? Okay, thank you. It is 5:44 at News Radio 930 WBEN. They slipped out of the jack. I apologize for that very, very much. Former Erie County DA John Flynn is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. I'm going to go back to that question we've talked about previously, especially now since the pressure is building. Let's just presume, let's do a little fantasy here, that the DNA is not in that database. Given the publicity of this case, does that increase the odds of being able to go on what they would never call a fishing expedition into the private sites, but we'll call it a fishing expedition?
Yeah. Well, there's going to be an intermediate stop first, though, okay? So if there's no hit in the CODA database, then they can go to what we call familiar DNA, okay, which is let's say they have the profile, and the profile matches a family member who is incarcerated or who has been arrested and convicted, okay? So the DNA is not an exact match, but you can tell by the DNA that it's a relative of, let's just use a fake name, Joe Smith, okay?
Oh, yeah,
and Joe
exactly.
Smith, and Joe Smith happens to be, living in wherever, California, okay? What you're going to do now is you're going to go visit now Joe Smith and say, hey, Joe, do you happen to have a relative who lives in Arizona, in the area? And then you hopefully, oh, yeah, my cousin does. Yeah, Jimmy. And now you can, you know, take the information that you got from the, quote, family member, and then use that to further investigate who may be living in the Tucson, Arizona area or in Arizona in general. So that would be your next step. If you strike out then you got to get a court order to force one of these private lab companies or private, you know, Ancestry.com, whatever, okay, companies to tap into their database. But that I think I remember one case where We tried to go down that path, and for some reason, I can't remember, it didn't work out. We got roadblocked somehow. Again, obviously, you want to try that, but that is not as easy as, obviously, the CODIS or the familiar DNA.
Would that have been before we knew about the arrest of the bike path killer, Artemio Sanchez? Wasn't there something with that situation, or am I conflating that with the situation of the people who went to prison without actually doing the crime?
I don't remember whether it was the latter. I think it might have been the latter time, but don't quote me on that.
Yeah,
it was definitely after. No, it was definitely during my time as DA. So it's been within the past, 9 years now. That there was one instance, I forgot what case it was, to tell you the truth, where we talked about going down that path, and I had one of my ADAs inquire into that path, and we never actually got a court order though to actually go ahead and do it though. So you got to have a court order. You can't just subpoena one of these companies because they have no obligation to file a subpoena. You got to literally get a court order to do this. Unless I should caveat this, unless the rules are different in Arizona. And so there might be some different rules that have been established, through the Arizona Supreme Court and the Arizona, case law, that I'm not aware of. But I'm pretty sure you got to get a court order.
All right. You mean you don't have LexisNexis right in front of you to? No.
I don't have Lexus.
I'm kidding. It is 540. I thought you traveled with it. 803-0930 is the phone number, 548 at News Radio 930 WBEN. Now, you might have heard me opening a box in the background because earlier today I said I just happened to have an unused Ancestry.com test kit in front of me. I have not spat into the tube as of yet. I see absolutely nothing like any kind of form that allows you to either opt in or opt out of being part of a database to which law enforcement would have access because you have given consent. I don't see any form like that. It was talked about on Ashley Banfield. There was last night. Not seeing that with Ancestry.com. The 23andMe, I'm sure if I look around long enough, I'll find something in the studio. It is 549 at News Radio 930 WBEN. So that's why my headphones slid off. That's why it came out of the jack. That's why I couldn't hear Jones. That's what happened. One of the things that I would like to hear more about right now, John, remember when we talked about the news story that the staff, the people who had worked on Nancy Guthrie's house were going to be DNA swabbed? We talked about that, and that was reported, but we've not heard anything that I've seen or read, any results or any indication of what percentage of the staff people who've worked at her house over the years have actually been swabbed.
Well, you got to get their consent to do that. Yep. You can't just force someone to get a swab unless you arrest them or prosecute them. So they got to consent to do that. And there's been no indication that no one's like refused. You can trick them too. You can bring them into bring them in for questioning and put a give them a bottle of water and then take the bottle back from them and get their DNA off the bottle of water. There's ways to get it if they don't consent to it. But I guess my take on that, Tom, is that there's been no matches. There's been nothing that says that the DNA that they found in the house that was not Nancy's. Again, people are working in the house, so you would think that they would leave their DNA there. Let me take back what I said. There could be a match there, obviously, but there's going to be a reason for the match. And that, I'm a cleaning lady. I'm there once a week, and I'm cleaning the house. My DNA is going to be in the house. So unless there's some other evidence that would tie them to doing something wrong, they're going to be cleared.
John, I've obviously stopped keeping tracks of the date. I mean, 17 days, I think. I don't know. It's around there. I'm getting very frustrated. And I can imagine what the Guthries are going through. So I got about a minute left. So if these DNA tests come up negative, where in the world does the investigation go from there? Because the best possible lead was fruitless.
Tips, that's your best bet going forward. I mean, you know, someone's gonna call in with a legitimate tip. You know, people like to talk, and people trip up, and so you just gotta hope that whoever is responsible for this trips up somehow and tells someone, talks to someone. You know, does something out of the ordinary that raises someone's eyebrows, and that someone then reports it to the police. Pretty much probably the only way you're going to catch this person is a tip. There's no way that the ring cams are going to work on these people's houses and neighborhood. There's no street lights there. It's all dark. So they're not going to be able to, you know, see any cars from their ring cams, you know, in the dark night there, when there's no street lights. So you're probably going nowhere here without a tip.
John, if you could text me the answer to this question, at what point do police tell the family that you got to consider this a recovery and not a rescue? Unless you could do that in 30 seconds.
I can do it in 30 seconds. Not never, but not now. That's a message that you don't ever want to walk back. You're not even thinking about that right now.
John, I can't wait until our next time together. Actually, I think you should schedule in 5 to 6 every single day. You join this show on WBEN.
Like I said, call my agent. Absolutely.
You know what? These aren't billable hours for you, John, but still. Thanks a lot, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye. Former Erie County DA John Flynn on News Radio 930 WBEN.